It's Monday, July 20th, 2026, and this is Pip Install, your daily download on power, security and the machines. This weekend, the war with Iran stopped being a story about oil and became a story about caskets. Two American service members killed at a base in Jordan, the first US troops killed by Iranian fire since March, as America struck Iran for a ninth straight night, and the war's American death toll reached 17. Then, the president orders the Justice Department to start prosecuting his 2020 grievances. China builds an AI block to box out America, and in New Jersey, Spain ended an era. Let's install today's update. Start with the ones who aren't coming home. Freya.
On the night of July 17th, Iranian ballistic missiles and drones hit the Muwaffaq Salty airbase in Jordan, a base that hosts American troops and fighter jets. Two US service members were killed. A third was reported missing. On Saturday, searchers found unidentified remains. Four more were wounded badly enough to be flown to hospitals. And on Saturday, a third American was killed this weekend. This one in northern Iraq. The two in Jordan are the first killed by Iranian fire since March. Together, this weekend's losses pushed the war's US death toll to 17. Central Command is holding the names until the families are told. Washington answered within hours. A ninth straight night of strikes. Explosions rolling across Iran into Monday morning. The port cities, Tabriz in the north, and Bushehr, the city that houses Iran's nuclear plant. Iran fired back another wave of missiles, and a senior Iranian commander warned that if the strikes go on two or three more days, Tehran will launch what he called a full-scale offensive. The president spoke about the fallen on Sunday night, talking to reporters as he flew back to Washington from the World Cup final.
Well, we feel very badly, but you know, those great people, those great patriots were out there fighting that Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon.
Bash. The weight of that.
17 families are inside the worst week of their lives, and one of them is still waiting to be told which set of remains is theirs. Hold that, and hold this next to it, because it's the truth this show won't dress up. The regime in Tehran fired the missiles that killed those two Americans. The theocracy that spent a ceasefire arming for this earned every strike aimed at the people who launched that attack. And a ninth night of bombing a country of 90 million is also filling Iranian morgues with people who never had a vote in any of it. Both of those are true at once, and anyone selling you only one half is selling you something. I'll say it plainly. The commander-in-chief learned his troops were dead, and on Sunday he went to a soccer game and then talked about the coffins on the flight home. I'm not going to tell you a president can never sit in a stadium. I'm telling you that the split screen of this weekend, a final in New Jersey, a ninth night of fire over Iran, 17 flags folded, is the most honest picture of this country right now that you're going to get.
Stack, the strategy and the price.
The price moved first, which always tells you the market stopped believing this is contained. Oil jumped about 3% on Sunday, Brent up near $91, US crude near $85. The first real break above the plateau it had held for a week. Traders can absorb a blockade. They cannot absorb dead Americans, plus a strike list that now includes a nuclear city. Because that's the escalation underneath the casualties, hitting near Bushehr, and an Iranian general saying out loud that two or three more nights buys a full-scale offensive. There is still no defined end here, no surrender Tehran can sign, no target list that ends the war, just we hit them very hard again tonight on a loop. That is the exact shape of the thing the analysts keep naming, a forever war, entered one retaliation at a time.
Watch the missing soldier's name, watch whether oil clears 100, and watch the word offensive. Because if Iran means it, this weekend was not the peak, it was the on-ramp. Home now, to a second story that is about power in a different key. Stack.
Thursday, the president declassified documents claiming foreign interference in 2020. This weekend, he took the next step, and it's the one that matters. he ordered the Justice Department to prosecute the people he says were involved. Read what just happened. A sitting president directed federal prosecutors to open cases growing out of his own election grievance. The reaction was immediate. Senator Markey called for his impeachment. Senator Schumer pronounced the president's elections bill dead on arrival. And Congressman Crow called the whole exercise a lie to suppress the 2026 vote. And the factual flaw hasn't moved an inch. The government's own declassified assessment from January 2021 found no indications that any foreign actor attempted to alter any technical aspect of the voting process in 2020.
So the machine has turned over from claim to prosecution. The Justice Department pointed at a grievance the evidence doesn't support. Watch who gets the first subpoena. That tells you whether this is a speech or a campaign. Our beat, and while Washington was at war, Beijing made a move on the future. Freya.
Xi Jinping launched a new body called the World AI Cooperation Organization, WIKO, formally stood up on July 16th with 29 founding countries. Not the usual Western club. Indonesia, Brazil, Malaysia, South Africa, Senegal, Pakistan, and Russia. Its stated mission is to write global AI rules so that, in Xi's words, no single country dominates the technology. Translate that? It is a direct answer to the United States. While Washington pours AI into its classified networks and its targeting doctrine, Beijing is building the multilateral lane, positioning China as the convener of the global South on the one technology that will define the century.
So what? There are now two AI world orders forming in real time. An American one, wired into weapons, and a Chinese one, wired into diplomacy. And most of the planet's people live in the countries Beijing just invited into the room. The chips are one race, the rules are another, and the US just watched a rival open a 29-nation head start on the second one. And finally, the game that stopped 100 million hearts and closed a book. Heap.
It was the ending nobody in blue and white wanted. The World Cup final, MetLife Stadium. Spain and Argentina. Messi and the teenager. And it was Spain, 1-0. It took until extra time, the 106th minute, when Ferran Torres finally beat Emi Martinez, who had already made 11 saves, a final record, standing on his head to keep Argentina alive. It didn't help that Enzo Fernandez got himself sent off late, and Argentina played the end a man down. And so, Lionel Messi's last World Cup ends not with a lift, but with a walk past the trophy, while on the other side of the field, Lamine Yamal, 19 years old, holds it up. The king didn't get his fairy tale. The heir just wrote his. That's the cruelty and the beauty of the thing. The torch doesn't get handed over. It gets taken.
The president watched it from a box at MetLife. Here's the review he gave reporters on the walk back to the plane.
It looked like Spain dominated, but it was a very close match. So it was great. It was a great event.
A great event. And here's what the tape catches that a headline can't. He said that about the game, seconds before he turned to the 17 Americans who won't watch the next one. Same podium, same breath. That was the weekend, in one split screen. A 19-year-old lifting a trophy in New Jersey, a president grading the match, and 17 families learning to say a name in the past tense. A country can do all of that in the same 48 hours. Cheer and grieve and barely notice it's doing both. That's your install for Monday, July 20th. Watch the missing soldier's name, watch oil, and hold the 17 close. The analysis is Anna Dudley's. I just handed you the update. I'm Pip. Package install success. We'll see you on the next install.